Attention, Free Stretch listeners, an important announcement before we send you over to Bobby and a great podcast presented by Bill Curry Ford. Sunday, early morning watch party for the Bucks-Panthers game in England. The watch party is not in England. It is at Buffalo Wild Wings in South Tampa, 4015 South Dale Mabry Highway. Ira Kaufman will be out there starting at 9 a.m. Kickoff is at 9:30. He will have gift cards. South Tampa Buffalo Wild Wings. Also, for our friends south of the bay, Buffalo Wild Wings is accommodating Bucks fans at their University Park location, 5235 University Parkway. Watch the Bucks and the Panthers at those Buffalo Wild Wings.
All right, welcome to the Free Stretch here on JoeBucksFan.com, brought to you by Bill Curry Ford. I'm Bobby Fenton. Week 6 edition of the show here, and the roller coaster dips again as the Bucks drop one to the Saints in New Orleans, 31-24, drop to 2-3 on the season. We got the Panthers in London coming up on Sunday. It's a 9:30 a.m. kickoff, the first time. I'm pretty sure I didn't look this up, but it's got to be true, right? The first time the Bucks have ever kicked off in their entire history in the a.m. Eastern time. I mean, the other times they played in London were moved up at London time, so they still kicked off at 1 or in the afternoon. So it should be a fun weekend, something different, something we've never done before. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about the Saints game. We'll talk about all the other stuff here on the show today. Again, brought to you by our good friends at Bill Curry Ford, where, like I always tell you, one of the best, no, not even one of the best deal going today that you're not going to get anywhere else, regardless of the prices, which are also great, is the lifetime warranty. Unlimited years, unlimited miles, as long as you're the one who still owns the car. It could be 2, 3, 4 years from now, whatever it is, you have the car, engine trouble, whatever it is, take it in. Bill Curry Ford will take care of it. They've got a huge service center right there on site, and you're covered. And that's in addition to 10 years of roadside assistance. You don't need AAA or anything anymore. First year, oil changes, everything's taken care of, just bring it in. And again, lifetime warranty. Every car, not just the brand new ones. You can buy new, used, pre-owned. It may not even be a Ford. They got tons of stuff over there. All right, so check it out. The website, BillCurryFord.com. That's C-U-R-R-I-E, BillCurryFord.com. And if you go down there in person, a mile north of Raymond James Stadium on Dale Mabry, it's just past Hillsboro, mention me, mention the Free Stretch, mention Joe Bucks Fan. And my good friend Sean Sullivan, the GM there, will drop the Joe Bucks Fan discount on you on top of the already transparent online pricing. So check them out, BillCurryFord.com. That's C-U-R-R-I-E, BillCurryFord.com. As for the Buccaneers, okay, let's talk about Sunday for a few minutes before we get on to this game in London on Sunday morning. The Bucks aren't going to win every game. And we know that. And we're going to be on the roller coaster all year. Hey, coming off the Rams game, we're pretty good. Maybe this team can make something stick. Maybe they're a playoff team. And then after this past Sunday, oh, yeah, we suck, 2-3, blah, blah, same old thing. It's the same team, folks. You're going to win some. You're going to lose some. But here's where I got pissed off again on Sunday. I talked about this 2 weeks ago after the Giants game, and we're just not good enough to be leaving opportunities on the table and to be as conservative as we are. And against the Rams, obviously, every game's different. A lot of things broke their way against the Rams. They had short fields. They had turnovers, and that's all great. But they were also aggressive, and they looked like a team that was going to take it to the other guy and didn't care, wasn't worried about consequences, because we were in control of our destiny. So you go to Sunday, and it was clear from the early part of the game that the Bucs weren't as sharp. Jameis wasn't quite as sharp, although he wasn't terrible. Obviously, it's a tough environment there in the dome with the noise and stuff, but that's not a big deal. I mean, fans don't come on the field. And so, early on, you knew it might be a tough day for the Bucks. And actually, if you watch the game, felt like an ass-kicking. I think we should commend the Bucks in a way, because they were in the game into the fourth quarter and actually had a chance to win that game. It didn't feel like that watching the game. Like, it felt like we were just getting destroyed. And yet, the Bucks stayed at arm's reach and had a chance. But again, before we get to any other part of the game, I want to go right down to this, okay? It was 24-10, second half. Bucks scored a touchdown to make it 24-17. Okay, hey, we got a little something going here now. And they kicked off to the Saints Got to stop. Got the ball back. It's like, it was like late third quarter at this point. It's 24-17. Actually, I got the drive chart right here. 3:42 to go in the third quarter. We had scored to cut a 24-10 deficit down to 24-17. And now the defense felt like for the first time that day actually got a stop and got the ball back. And now we got a chance to go tie the game. 24-17, here we go. It's gone really crappy so far, but somehow the Bucks have a chance to tie this game. Ball's in their hand. So 3:42 to go in the third quarter. Immediately they jump, and it's first and 15. Now I think it was Marpet jumped offside, whatever it was. So now it's first and 15 on their own, whatever it was, 30, 32, something like that. So just the mid-30s. They run the ball on first down. There's your first problem. I don't care if the other guy knows what you're doing. You shouldn't be running the ball on first and 15. And I keep hearing Bruce Arians. I mean, he was quoted after the game saying, and I'm reading a direct quote now, actually. Let me read this because this kills me. This is one of the things I'm getting upset about. Third down was huge, Arians said. Our inability to maintain possession and get the running game going. We had some good runs going, but we didn't get the rhythm going. Like, he still thinks that the running game is the problem. Don't run the ball on first and 15. It was second and 13 right after that. You're behind the sticks already with the penalty. Now it's even worse. Even third and eight or second and eight would have been bad. You know, the best teams, the best offenses, they're not necessarily good on third down. They don't have as many third. Like, they get first downs on first and second down. They're just moving the ball. Chunks of yardage. Like, that's what the best offenses do. And yes, there will come a time in every game, a handful of times, when you need to stay on the field when it's third down and you need a big conversion and you want to avoid punting. Yes, and the Bucs on that drive actually completed an 11-yard pass on second and 13 to get it to third and two. There, actually would have been okay if they had run it, but they tried to pass it on third and two. And it was a play that just had zero chance. I mean, it was a terrible play. Like, it wasn't even an option, like, where, hey, if somebody's not there, maybe Jameis can run for. They just panned themselves into a corner with their play call. It was a rollout to the short side of the field. Just terrible. Like, it was a terrible play call. Incomplete pass. And I wouldn't have even complained about that play call if I knew they were planning on going for it on fourth down anyway. But if that was their, we got to get it right here or die play, that was a bad call. So they don't get it on third and two. And fourth and two, here we go. Fourth and two, they're on their own 43. They're down by 7. Your defense has not done well stopping Teddy Bridgewater to this point, for whatever reason. And we punt the ball. You cannot punt the ball in fourth and two there. You can't do it. Like, you need points. You have to be aggressive. I always hear Bruce Arians, oh, we're going to be fearless, blah, blah, blah. Look, it rings hollow unless you actually do it. All right? You have to actually go out and do those things. And I don't know what else to say about it. I mean, the Bucks aren't good enough, and most teams aren't good enough. I mean, I talk every week, don't we? Talk about this every week about how fine the line is in the NFL between wins and losses. I mean, it's not college football where you got 12 games and four of them you're going to win by multiple touchdowns just because of who your opponent is, and maybe a couple more or a handful of games that are going to be tight ones, but you've got, like, built-in games you're just going to win no matter what. Every NFL game comes down to a couple plays, a couple calls, a couple red zone conversions, a couple of decisions by the coaching staff, and certainly when it's in your hands like that, and you know you need points. I mean, you're not going to play this game of punting the ball, getting it back, getting stops over and over and over, not with the way the Bucs defense was playing on Sunday. And certainly in any game, I mean, the points are always the thing, and you voluntarily give it up on fourth and two. And if you're calling plays, you know, I'm not saying it's easy, but when you're calling plays on third and two and you know you're going for it anyway on fourth, that makes it a lot easier. Like, you're thinking, okay, I got to get 2 yards in two plays. I can do. You could have run it twice in a row and probably gotten it on one of the downs. But man, you just make it too hard for yourself. That really, really, really upset me on Sunday. I know sometimes, like, because I'm on Twitter during the game. You can find me at BobbyGameDay and email me if you want to, BobbyGameDay@yahoo.com. I like to hear what everybody else is saying. It's kind of like watching the game with a much larger group of people that are also Bucks fans when you're on there on Twitter. And I know a lot of people don't even use Twitter, and you're probably better off. But I like to do that. I like to watch the games and kind of scroll through Twitter while I'm doing it. And not a lot of people even brought it up. It wasn't like one of the things people were complaining about on Sunday during the game, yet that was a pivotal moment. So you can guess, I mean, you already saw the game, but even if you didn't, you could guess what happened after the Bucs punted on 4th-and-2 from near midfield, and it's a worthwhile risk. Even if you don't get it, you give the ball to the Saints at your own 43. That's not terrible. It's not like you're on your own 10. So you can guess what happened. It was actually a good kick. They pinned him inside the 10. It was a fair caught at the 9, I believe. So good job, Bradley Pinion. And I always love playing a game when a team punts when they're not supposed to because they're just, oh, so scared of the other team having better field position. Even though punts, you know, you're netting, what, 40, 45 yards? And that's a big deal, I guess, but it's not as big of a deal as people think. So the Saints, from their own 9, how many plays, this is the game I always play, how many plays until they cross the point on the field where they would have been if you had missed the 4th down anyway? In this case, to the Bucs' credit, it actually took the Saints a while. It was play 9 of their drive that they finally got across the 43-yard line where they would have been anyway if the Bucs had missed the 4th down. And that was play 9 of a 13-play, 91-yard touchdown drive that the defense allowed, allowing the Saints to retake a 2-score lead at 31-17. At that point, there were 10 minutes and 37 seconds left in the fourth quarter, and even though they weren't mathematically out of the game, it felt like lights out. And it was. The Bucs got a touchdown late, a kind of a garbage touchdown to make it 31-24. The onside kick didn't work because they never do. And the Bucs lost 31-24. So, you know, again, I always say this on these shows. I want to make sure everybody understands. I don't think I know more about football than these guys. I mean, whether it's the players, whether it's Bruce Arians, whether it's any of the assistants, even, you know, the low-level, whoever the 20-something-year-old, you know, this year's version of Sean McVay Dubois is, all these people have probably forgotten more about football in their lives than I will ever know, okay? I'm not questioning their football knowledge. But that's what makes it all the more frustrating, because these people know so much about football, and yet they can't get the basic stuff right that anybody who plays Madden knows. You know, like, you don't punt on 4th-and-2 in that situation. You have to try to get a 1st down, stay on the field, and go get points. And that's obvious. Like, it's not, you know, and if Bruce Arians is so fearless, he shouldn't care what I say or what anybody in the media says if he doesn't get it and he catches criticism. I think we need a little more fear, to be honest. I think fearless is the wrong word. Sometimes people aren't fearless enough about certain things, but sometimes they don't have enough fear about the other things. You should be afraid of punting there. Like that, you talk about being conservative, all right? Maybe going for it's kind of conservative. I think the gamble is punting, because you punt there and you may not see the ball again down less than 2 scores. That's how we need to frame these thoughts. I think that sometimes we think, oh, riverboat gambler going for it on 4th-and-2. The gamble is in not going for it. Like, the smart conservative play there is to go for it. So we need to reframe how we think of these things, instead of painting it as, oh, I'm not going to roll the dice here and go for it. Oh, no, you're rolling the dice all right. You just don't realize it, because you just gave the ball back to an offense who's been kicking your ass up one side and down the other all day, and they're about to go 91 freaking yards in 13 plays and turn out your lights. And that's exactly what happened. So, and you know, the defense was very upsetting. I tweeted about this during the game. I mean, the offense didn't have their best day, and certainly after the Rams game, you know, it wasn't what we were used to seeing from the week before. That's going to happen sometimes, but the offense didn't kill us, I thought. You know, some of these games are tight. Some of these games you're not going to score a million points, but the defense let the Bucs down over and over and over. Obviously, the drive after they punted on 4th-and-2. There was another one before the half. I know we punted before the half, and there was like a few minutes to go till halftime, and the score was 10-10, and we really, really, really needed to get in the locker room at 10-10. I would have even been okay if they had allowed a field goal and it's 13-10, but just hang on for dear life there. Just find a way, just bear down and get us in the locker room without letting this get to a touchdown lead again. And what the Bucs defense do? They completely folded over. Saints drove right down the field and scored just a back-breaking touchdown before the half. Now it's 17-10 at halftime instead of 13-10 or 10-10. And that was a really big moment in the game, I thought. And I don't have the numbers in front of me. It's hard. I need to figure out a way to look this stuff up. But if you look up teams who score a touchdown in the final 2 minutes of the half, I got a feeling that that's a really underrated, I think, stat in football, and I need to back that up by actually giving you the stat. I don't have it, so I apologize. I'll try to actually find out that number this week. But points before the half, especially touchdowns, but like you get a, if a team gets a touchdown like in that final minute before halftime, I want to know what the record is of teams that do that. I'll bet you it's a damn near like 800 winning percentage. Like that's a really big moment in the game. And the Bucs gave up another one on the back end of it to start the second half. I mean, it's just like you're doing okay, and then boom. Need the defense to clamp down there. Of course, on that drive right before the half, Carlton Davis, part of that drive was an incompleted pass, an out route that Bridgewater threw that Carlton Davis broke up, and he was penalized 15 yards, giving the drive new life. Plus, he was ejected from the game for a helmet-to-helmet hit on the receiver, and people are bitching about that. Oh, my God, it's a football play. It's bang, bang, the usual stuff you hear about it. And listen, I watched it on the replay when the game was going on. I've watched it again since then on Twitter. He launches his head directly at the other player's helmet. You can't do that. Those hits, and number one, by rule, they have to call that. But number two, I'm not even saying, oh, their hands are tied because that's the crappy rule. I think it's a good rule. I don't think you should hit somebody the way he did. If you want football to be around long term, we got to have that stuff out of the game. And I know, listen, I've played football before, not on the NFL level, but you all, if you've heard me long enough, you know I've played semi-pro football, which I'm probably going to do again, the Dunedin Pirates. If you want to play too, go to DunedinPirates.com, by the way. Real football I'm talking about. This isn't flag football. It's an adult 18 and over semi-pro league. So I've played before, and again, not on a high level. I'm not pretending I know what it's like to be in an NFL game or even a college game or anything like that. But, I you know, watching that play, I mean, Carlton Davis is trying to separate the receiver from the ball. The out route's coming right at him. It's a big play. He wants to make sure that ball isn't completed. So you think, okay, big contact, separate the guy from the ball. I totally get it. I'm not mad at Carlton Davis. But the manner in which he did it was a penalty. Like, you can't complain about that. I mean, you can if you want to, but you don't have a leg to stand on. It was a penalty. So I don't have an issue with that call. Him being ejected, I didn't realize he was going to be ejected for it. I thought he'd just get a 15-yard penalty. But that depleted an already shaky secondary, and after he left the game, it was open season. I mean, the game really turned there because the Saints scored 14 quick points to make it 24-10. Bucks got a couple stops after that and scored, as we talked about, to make it 24-17. But then after that, you know, they were powerless to stop the Saints to get the next touchdown that was eventually the game winner that made it 31-17 at the time. But again, I don't have a problem with it. And the same thing with the pass interference. You know, Bruce Arians challenged the PI that he thought was offensive pass interference on what was a big completion by the Saints on one of their drives. And was it offensive pass interference? Probably, yeah. I mean, I saw the receiver push off a little bit. But, you know, we're still feeling out how this PI review thing works. And you have to understand, the standard, first of all, it is inconsistent. I agree with that. But it's also pretty high to overturn. And, you know, when I watched that on the replay, I thought to myself right away, I don't think they're going to overturn that. And if Bruce Arians thinks it's worth wasting a challenge on, fine. But I think he should not be shocked. He acted like he couldn't believe they didn't overturn it. And I wasn't surprised at all. And I didn't really have a problem with it either. I mean, there's some hand fighting that goes on. This was a little more than that. Yeah, there was a push. But again, don't get behind the guy like that. And if you're chasing him from behind, unless he grabs something on you or something like that, they're probably not going to overturn that call. So again, I don't like it, but I actually do understand, and I didn't have a huge problem with that either. I much more had a problem. See, those are things you can't control. Bruce Arians complains about things he can't control like that. You know, the hit and the penalty and the ejection of Carlton Davis, the non-offensive pass interference call, and you can bitch and moan and whine about things you can't control till the cows come home. My son does it all the time. You know, I don't want to do my after-school reading. I don't want to do this. He'll deep sighs. He'll go, ugh, or stuff like that that kids do. And the biggest lesson I'm trying to teach him in life is that complaining about stuff that cannot be changed, and I'm not saying you should just let injustice slide, but once it's done, you got to just figure out a way to move on with your life and succeed anyway. Like, that's one of the biggest things I'm trying to instill in him. So Bruce Arians complains about that. Then he punts on 4th and 2. That one you had control of. And that one cost us more than those other things, okay? Probably in the long run. We don't know if they would have gotten it or not. We don't know if they would have scored if they had gotten it. But that was in your hands, and you let that go. And that was a big, big spot in the game. Again, email me if you want to. BobbyGameDay@yahoo.com is the email address on Twitter. You can get me at BobbyGameDay. We're getting ready for the Bucks and the Panthers, 9:30 a.m. Sunday morning. And let me say this. I like deviations from the norm every once in a while. So I think when the Buck game is over on Sunday and it's still, you know, it'll be just before noon or 1 p.m., the 1 p.m. games will be starting. I think I'll probably be like, oh, man, it'd be nice to have a Buck game right now. Like, we get the whole day to go without a Buck game. But I think I like trying 9:30 just this once. I know my Sunday thing, everybody's got different stuff they do on Sundays. My Sunday thing has always been Ultimate Frisbee. We play every Sunday morning. If any of you are Ultimate Frisbee players or you just want to have fun, run around a little bit, our Ultimate Frisbee game is always going on Sunday mornings around 9 a.m. And we play downtown at Riverfront Park, usually. Email me if you want more details, BobbyGameDay@yahoo.com. I'll give them to you. If you can hang, like, don't come out there if you can't run 10 yards without collapsing from heat exhaustion. I don't care how well you can throw a frisbee. That part is no problem. But you need to be able to, like, run around for an hour and a half in the hot sun. So anyway, point is, I do that every Sunday at 9. We moved our game this week. It's going to be at 8 a.m. We'll have it done probably by 8 or by 9:15. You know, shower up, and we're going to head straight back to one of my buddy's houses and watch the game. It's going to be great. We'll have, like, breakfast with the Buccaneers. And, you know, we made that adjustment just for this one weekend. I think it'll be fun. And for those, I know some people have told me, first of all, we got a few listeners over there in London who have told me they've been circling this game on their calendar since it came out, and they're going to be there. I know a few other people have told me they're making a trip around this game, which I think is really cool. I'd love to do that one day. I have been to London. The idea of seeing the Bucks while I was there would have just blown my mind. This is back in, like, you know, 15 years ago. But London's an incredible city. London's probably the favorite city I've ever visited. Probably London and Toronto are my two favorite places I've visited. Just awesome places to visit. But London, you could spend weeks in and see something new every day. So, to all you guys going out there, have a great time. I know the Bucks have done this a couple times before and came away both times with a loss. I don't like the idea of giving up home games for it. At least with the Super Bowl, I get it. Like, it's a requirement. I didn't care for it when the Glazers did it the first two times because they just wanted to, quote-unquote, expand their presence in London. I thought it came at the detriment of the team. Especially, you know, the one they lost to the Patriots, what was it, 09 or whatever it was, and we were in the doldrums anyway. The one against the Bears, I can't remember what year that was, but I think that came in a season where it was a little more important, if my memory serves me. Anyway, you know, hopefully the Bucks can get a win over there and it doesn't hurt them that much and they come back and they have the bye. So looking at the injuries, this is the biggest problem. Alex Kappa, as you've probably heard by now, broke his arm in the middle of the Saints game, continued playing, finished the game, and the Bucks offensive line didn't have a great game by any stretch. They were pretty bad. But hats off to Alex Kappa for sticking it out. But now he's out. And then Damar Dotson, who by his own admission said, hey, I'm fighting Father Time here. I'm trying to stay on the right side of it, but this is where I'm at. He's got a calf thing and a hamstring thing and a Marcus Davenport pushing you with one arm directly back into your own quarterback thing. So the whole right side of the offensive line is out. It's going to be Earl Watford, who was drafted by Arians in Arizona. The Bucks got him as a free agent. And it's going to be Earl Watford will be at guard, right guard. Josh Wells will be the right tackle this week in Dotson's stead, and the Bucks got him as a free agent from Jacksonville earlier this season. So you've got replacement-level players on the right side of the offensive line. Problem with that is these are actually replacement-level guys because the guys they're replacing were really our starters are replacement-level to begin with, and Kappa and Damar Dotson. It's a concern. It's a concern. And, you know, the Bucs offense didn't exactly light it up the first time against Carolina. Their defense did a masterful job, both the goal line stand to win it and just keeping Christian McCaffrey in check in general. Cam Newton was hobbled that game. He wasn't himself and probably hadn't been even before that. So now you look at a new quarterback, and once again the Bucs get a quarterback who is not the number one guy as far as the depth chart going into the season is concerned, although the play of Kyle Allen has led some to say, oh, wait, what have we been wasting time with Cam so far? He's our number one guy. He's not, by the way. I mean, they're 3-0 with Kyle Allen, and he played well in that first one. I think it was Arizona. He has not been very good since then, and this is a guy who should not be 4-0 as a starter by the end of this game on Sunday. I know I said the same exact thing last week about Teddy Bridgewater, who at least with Bridgewater is a veteran guy who has started before, but there's no reason he should have done what he did on Sunday. I think he'd thrown the ball more than 20 yards downfield, I'm talking about Bridgewater now, twice this entire season. I know he hasn't been in there the whole season, but he's even gone downfield more than 20 yards just twice. One was picked off, one was incomplete, and he completed like four or five of them on Sunday against the Bucs. So that's a problem. Now, I don't think Carolina's passing game is going to try and test the Bucs as much as the Saints did. Obviously, Christian McCaffrey is going to be, again, he ain't going to have 2.3 yards a carry the way he did the first time, or at least that's Carolina's plan. If he does that again, if the Bucs stop him like that again, then I think they'll win, obviously. But you look at the Bucs against backup quarterbacks, and I mean, you could probably just assemble a generic backup quarterback and just take the stats combined of all the different backup quarterbacks that the Bucs have had start against them over the past several years, and that guy's probably in the Hall of Fame, whoever that generic guy is, because his numbers, if you can just condense and combine all the backup quarterback performances the Bucs have had against them in recent years, I mean, the passer rating's probably like 3,578 or something like that. Ridiculous. So you never can be sure. In the Bucs defense, it's still a work in progress, especially in the secondary. Hargraves was really bad against Michael Thomas on Sunday. And again, this is how it is, okay? It's going to be a roller coaster ride all season. They're not good enough to consistently beat teams that we think, oh, they could be slightly better than this. They're still going to win some, lose some with that. And that's what makes everybody that you hear saying, 8-8 feels about right, and it really does. You know, I don't know if that's how it'll end. I think the schedule, like we talked about, if they can get through this at 4-4 these first eight games, you know, maybe they can go 5-3 in the second half and be 9-7. But they are what they are. Kyle Allen has, passer rating is not something I care about. It's not a very telltale statistic, but he does have the highest passer rating amongst undefeated quarterbacks in 2019. There's only four of them. But he has lost. He's fumbled six times in three games. Five of them have been lost. It doesn't matter how many they've lost. He's fumbled six times in three games. And he also had another one that was negated by a penalty. So he's fumbled seven times in three games. And that's something. I mean, these games turn on plays like that. The Bucs aren't going to win probably without a play or two like that. Obviously, it's going to be a point of emphasis for Allen, but you know they need to make this guy try. And I know this sounds crazy, given our secondary, but and maybe I'll just sound like a complete jerk when we come back here on Monday and he put up another backup quarterback, you know, Bridgewater-like performance against the Bucs. But you know, dare him to beat you by playing quarterback. Don't let McCaffrey do his thing, and see what happens, because I think that's your best chance. And if you can't stop him doing that, if you can't stop another backup quarterback after all that, then you know maybe we're wasting our time here anyway. As far as Jameis goes, you know, I mentioned him a little bit earlier in the show. Overall, right now, through four games, there's been some peaks and valleys. He places, if you go by some of the advanced metrics, like he's middle of the pack. He's 15th in DVOA. He's a little lower, but still like that middle third in QBR. And things like that. And obviously he had the real stinker against the 49ers. He had a really, really, really good, like, top-end performance against the Rams. The Giants game, and then this game this past weekend were so-so. The same with the Panthers game on a Thursday night a few weeks ago. So what Jameis hasn't done is turn it over a ton lately. And that's been the most positive sign. But they still need to get more aggressive with him. They still need to pass more on first down. And again, Bruce Arians says all these things. He says all the things you want to hear about Jameis Winston. You know, it's always, we want to get more aggressive. We want to do this. You know, grip it and rip it. Blah, 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 blah. Show it to me. Another quote from Arians. Quote, we're built to run and stop the run and then get after the quarterback and take shots. That's our MO and we're not changing. This is not 20 years ago. Like, no, don't be built to run. You need to be built to pass. You need to be aggressive passing the ball on early downs. And it's not just about making third down more manageable, which is something else Bruce Arians said. It's about avoiding third down altogether if you can. Get first downs and then get more first downs on first and second down. And get big chunks of yardage. And again, to me, it just comes back to philosophy. And it comes, like, he can say what he wants, but you can tell by the way he's coaching, he's still not all the way. Either he's not all the way there on Jameis, or this is just his nature. And either way, I mean, I know these guys, it's easy for me to say, I'm not the one who's got a big contract and trying to please my boss. But you know, you really do have to just say F it and go after it and go get it. And even though that seems like, again, a riverboat gambler type mentality, it really isn't. Like, the riverboat gamble is to sit back and try to eke your way to these victories and just hope 17 different things break your way to win. Because that's what you do when you punt. Like, when you punt on fourth and two, when you don't take charge of things, when it's in your hands and you kind of hope, you basically put yourself in a position where you're hoping like five or six different things now go exactly how you need them to go, or you're not going to be where you need to be late. Where you can do just this one big thing instead and completely change the complexion of the game. And sometimes it works, but more often than not, it doesn't. You know, you're not going to get those breaks. You're not going to get that big stop, then get it back, then score. Just go do it while you got the best chance to do it. And if nothing else, like, that mentality has to change if the Bucs are going to do anything this season that we hope they can do. Otherwise, we'll spin our wheels, we'll win a couple here, we'll lose a couple here, and like I said, 7-9, 8-8, maybe 6-10. It'll depend on a play here and there, a call here and there, all in that. But fortune favors the bold, and especially when you're the Bucs, and especially when you have the type of defense they have, which has improved. I mean, clearly it has, but it's still not, you know, you're going to have to fight fire with fire, man. And I've been disappointed twice now. Not just that they lost, you're going to lose, like I said. But I'm really disappointed in the Giants loss before the Matt Gay kick ever even happened. And I was disappointed on Sunday. Not that I think they would have won the game. Like I said, that was one. You're not going to win them all. And that was one that you kind of looked at and said, okay, they could lose this. And if they go out and beat Carolina, they would have gone 1-1. Beautiful conditions out here for recording, by the way, on my back porch. Let the birds serenade us as we close out the free stretch. But seriously, before the game last week, would you have taken 1-1 in the next two, both division games, both away from home, would leave you at 2-1 in the division? Yeah, you take it. I take it too. So everything the Bucs are trying to do is still in front of them after a loss like that. But again, just please maximize your chances of winning at the very least. And if you still don't win, fine. But I'm tired of them losing and me walking away from the game thinking, well, we didn't even maximize our chance of something good happening there. BobbyGameDay@Yahoo.com is the email address. On Twitter, you can catch me at BobbyGameDay. And with that, folks, I want to thank all of you for listening. Have a great weekend this weekend. Stay safe. Enjoy the early morning. You know, like I said, have friends over. Make breakfast. Make Bloody Marys. Do whatever it is. Have a get-together. I think it'll be cool to watch the Bucs in the AM. First time we've ever had a chance to do that. Something different. But either way, it won't change the game. It's the Bucs and the Panthers. It's a big divisional game. And it's a chance. And Bruce Arians was right about this when he said, hey, we got to find a way. He said, good teams, if these guys are winners, these guys are champions, you find a way not to lose two in a row. So again, Bucs can do that. They have that chance on Sunday. Thanks to all of you. Thanks to our good friends and our sponsors at Bill Curry Ford. Thanks to the Joes for giving me this platform and allowing me to be on the single best place anywhere on the internet or anywhere else for Bucs coverage, JoeBucsFan.com. I'm Bobby Fenton. That's the Week 6 Free Stretch. Wherever you are, good morning, good afternoon, good night, and go Bucs.